Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is part two of the Graveyard Race Report. This is Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. This is Ashland Dave coming at you from Ashland, Virginia, Center of the Universe. And it is still the week after the race, I guess now it's March 16th. The reason I wanted to do the race report in two sections was, it was going to be time-consuming, and when I produced the podcast here on my kitchen counter, which is my podcast studio, I got to have it quiet in the house, or I get distracted, and lots of background noise it just distracts me. So that's why I had to cut it into two. And I really don't want the podcast to be generally much longer than 30 or 40 minutes because that's mainly the length of podcasts that I like to listen to. And I'm sure there's other people out there that are probably similar to me. So that gives you an option if you're a regular follower of the show. It doesn't totally take up too much time to listen to the show. So anyway, this is part two. And I know everybody's been eagerly awaiting that. I'm going to pick it up pretty much where I left off in the other show, and that was right just over the 50K mark. Got up to the next crew access point after leaving the just over the halfway mark around 1 in the morning, and that was 43.8 miles. I don't remember exactly where that was, but I remember that 8.3 mile stretch was pretty lonesome out there. I had Rodney with me, but there was just not much. There was just really nothing to see. It took about 2 hours to cover that. My feet were starting to hurt really, really bad. It was becoming an issue. The pain was starting to take over my conscious thoughts, and I was becoming very fixated on the distances between the times that I could get off my feet and get some relief. When I was out on the road, I wasn't stopping and sitting. Well, first of all, there was nowhere to sit down, but I wasn't stopping. I was just that one, you know, you hear it all the time with people that talk about ultras, that relentless forward progress, one step, one foot in front of the other, one foot in front of the other, until I got to aid stations or water stop, the crew access points, and that's where I was able to get some relief. But my feet were really just was hurting bad, and this is kind of where I wanted to interject an email I had gotten from Dr. Smitty, and he had written in that if he knows when the suffering will end, he thinks he can handle it. With running, we know where the finish line is. We know that if we can tolerate the pain and the suffering, knowing that it's eventually going to end at the finish line. And of course, you're not even thinking about what your recovery is going to be like. You're just thinking about how long can I take the pain to get to the finish line. Now, what was happening was that with this pain, was pushing to the front of my conscious thoughts, it meant that I was not able to, or I found it difficult to go to a happy place and think about something other than the pain messages that were constantly going to my brain, and then my brain was asking itself, what are you going to do to cope with this? Because it was the pads, it wasn't just the toes, it was the pads in my feet. This is what got me at North Face a couple years ago. It felt like the pads of my feet had been, like beat with a stick or a mallet. That's how bruised they felt. Of course, that's probably what was happening with, 200 pounds of force going down on each foot, or whatever the, pounds per square inch is. I'm carrying 200 pounds down the road on each foot, and it was brutal, to say the least. So the pain was really all I was constantly thinking about. I wasn't thinking about really anything else. I wasn't thinking about home. I wasn't thinking about family. I wasn't thinking about my job. I was just thinking about how much my feet hurt, and it just seems that's really all I remembered thinking about. About 1 in the morning, at this point I've been going for 10 hours, I performed another sock change, Felt a little better for a while when you get out of those wet socks. My feet just tend to perspire so much. And months back, Christina from the Lazy Bones Running blog had suggested that I use antiperspirant on my bottom of my feet. I did try that some during training, but it seems that my feet just perspired on top of that. Matter of fact, the antiperspirant, the spray, doesn't really work that well. Maybe I should have used something else, maybe a roll-on or something. But my feet just tend to really, really perspire a lot and just produce a lot of moisture. Dry Max socks, you know, they're supposed to wick moisture away because of the technology, but they didn't work either. So funny that before changing my socks, just about every time that I was able to, I think I took down 10 pairs of socks, and I think I went through all, I was doubling them up for some extra padding, but that was pretty useless. It was around this time that Tom had joined me. Rodney pretty much took me through the night, then Tom joined me, and he was going to be taking me into the promised land. The next point to stop was the Hatteras Lighthouse, which was the 49-mile mark, and this was a really weird experience. We could see the lighthouse for miles and miles and miles away. I don't know I don't know how many miles we could see it, but I think it was well over 6 miles we could see the lighthouse, and but we just never seemed to get any closer. It's kind of weird how that works. But once we turned onto the lighthouse road, thinking we were close, the damn thing still eluded me. The aid station was near the base of the lighthouse, but the access road to get out to the Cape, it was endless. It was endless. And it was a different kind of environment because it was in a kind of a grove of trees. But we finally got there, had a half marathon distance to go. For some reason, I was envisioning another warm community center like they had at Rodanthe. But all they had was a tent with some cots in it. There was some people lying on the cots. It was too cold outside. I needed to warm up, so I got in Tom's truck again. I mean, it was getting pretty cold. And again, I had to address what was going on with my feet. I needed to look at them again. You know, I was at 49 miles. I was getting ready to go a little bit longer than I ever have before, but things were just kind of all out of sorts. I can't really describe how much my feet hurt other than to say that there was no relief from the pain unless I was off sitting down. Just standing on them hurt. I was getting very close to having to make a decision whether I was going to be able to continue or not, because it wasn't getting worse. It wasn't getting any better. I just didn't know how long I was going to be able to cope with it. And I was getting close to making a decision. The pads of my feet were the skin was loosening up, and the outer skin was becoming discolored as the layers were rubbing against each other. And, you know, at that point in time, there was nothing that I was going to be able to do to fix the situation. But I knew as long as that skin didn't break, I could at least move forward. But the thing I worried about was that the skin breaking open and me not knowing about it, and then, again, being injured after the race. And that was the whole point, is I wanted to avoid that. And I had promised my wife that I was not going to injure myself doing this race, and I was going to keep that promise. There was going to always be another day, if I had to DNF. You know, my ego is not that big. I've got an ego, but I was in so much pain, I didn't really care at that point if I was going to have to pull out of the race. I knew I'd be letting everybody down. But, you know, I'm the one that's living my life. if I wasn't going to be able to go on, then I would come back and tame that beast on another day. So we left the lighthouse about 2:45 in the morning. And I'll just tell you now, it was going to take me almost 4 hours to cover the last 13.1 miles. The pain I was in was really starting to mess with my brain. I was getting self-preservation messages, which, the human being will the brain will seek to preserve the body. If you're doing something such as, you know, constantly, if you're doing something that's going to shut your body down, the brain is going to do its best to preserve you before, you know, you go unconscious or anything like that. Not that that's not, I wasn't near that kind of situation, but I was getting, you know, self-preservation messages of stop, you know, stop, get picked up, have them drive you to the finish line. What are you doing? Why did you do this? All those kinds of negative messages were coming up, and being that every step was, you know, was the pain was just at, was at the very forefront of my conscious thoughts, because that's what I was coping with. And I probably told Tom many times how much it hurt. He didn't really say much. He just would say, hey, "We're getting there. We'll get there. Keep going. Let's run to the next telephone pole." But anyway, so I didn't really know what to do. It kind of hurt less to shuffle. So that's what I was doing as much as possible. It was really slow going. There was one more crew access point at the 55.6 mile mark at the, there's a place called, I think, the Gingerbread Bakery. And I just kept telling myself, I just got to get to that point so I can sit down for a little while and get off my feet and get up the courage to finish the race, which at that point, I think was just 6.5 miles or so. Now, when I got to that point, I was seriously afraid of what my feet were going to look like when I did my last inspection. And I just knew it was going to be bad because of the way they hurt. If the skin was bloody and broken at that point, I had made the decision going into that crew access point that I was going to pull out of the race, because I learned a lot from when I got injured at the North Face in 2010, and this ultra marathoning hobby and this running hobby is fun and it's challenging, but it's not worth being at a commission for the other stuff in life for 1 to 2 weeks just to do it. And I learned that back in 2010, let me just explain that for a minute. I guess it's one thing if you can plan. Like, obviously, this time I finished the race. I took a week off from work after the race. It's like I'm off from work right now. I'll go back on the 19th because I wanted a vacation as well, and I knew I was going to need a couple days to recover. So I just went ahead and took – plus, I thought it was a good time to take off. I needed a break from work. And that way, if something did happen down there out of my control – which I guess everything down there was in my control. But say something had happened that I did something stupid and got hurt, at least I would have had some time off from work. When I ran the Keys Ultra Marathon last year, that was pretty perfect, because I think I went back to work just a couple days later. I had just taken a couple days off after we returned from Florida. Or did I have the rest of the week off? I can't really, you know, I don't even remember. I'm not even sure what point I'm trying to make. I guess the point I'm trying to make is I learned a lot from North Face in 2010. That was my first 50-miler, because the 2 weeks after that, when I was at home watching TV because I couldn't walk because my feet were in bandages and I was in a wheelchair, I missed out on some stuff with my family. And that, I think I missed a swim meet because I was too embarrassed to go out of the house. I missed an award presentation, actually, that I was going to get one evening at the Hanover County Board of Supervisors. I missed that. And so that would have been a nice presentation to me and my family. So I wasn't gonna do that. And I know pain is part of ultra running. Coping with that pain is definitely a challenge I like to take on. There's no doubt about that. But being stubborn and running on top of broken skin and making it worse with each step doesn't make any sense to me. There's no, you don't get any special awards for being, you know, a dumbass for running on, you know, spliced feet. It just doesn't. That's not coping with pain. That's injuring yourself. And I just wasn't going to do that. And some of these things were going through my head at that last time when I saw my crew with 6.5 to go. Well, my feet were still intact when I looked at them. The skin looked really weird. Nothing I hadn't seen before, but nothing was broken. There was no broken skin that was oozing, or of course there was a lot of duct tape around some of those toes, keeping them separated. But there was there didn't seem to be an injury, and so I decided to press on to the finish and just cope with the pain the best that I knew how. And up to that point, I'd been coping with it for hours. And I just continued to do that. So the only positive side, I guess, to my feet hurting was that I don't really remember that much about the rest of my body's condition. I do remember that I had a bad rash developing between my legs from friction and like a little higher, kind of like in the man area. And I wish I had addressed that, because that I paid for that dearly later in the shower and a day or so after that, because it was just that was tough. And if you need more information about that, you can email me. I'll keep that out of the podcast. And then my back was really hurting. It was my my lower back on the sides. I guess is that where your kidneys are? But I was urinating a lot, so I knew, because I was drinking so much, and I knew that's not what it was. I might have just been from keeping myself upright for so long. I don't think I'd ever been on my feet that long. So, and I've even worked double shifts throughout the years being on my feet, but I think we're always able to sit down. Okay, we had 6.5 miles to go, and it was about 4:48 in the morning. And I had the sunrise to look forward to. The blistering on my toes, like I had said, was pretty awful. But all those were easily addressed. It was the bottom of my feet. Now, what somebody did is they called my wife, who was staying at with Bob's family in Avon, because it was going to take her about 45 minutes to get to the finish line. And the cool thing about it was she was going to drive past my location, because there's only one road down there. And so somebody called her. The sun, you could start seeing the sun starting to come up. We just pressed on step by step. We ran from telephone pole to telephone pole. Then we'd walk one. Then we'd run two. We'd walk two. And I said, okay, we got to run two to make up for walking two. Then we'd run a minute, walk a minute. I actually was still using my Gym Boss, it's a beeper thing that you can change your intervals. And that worked out really, really good. It kind of beeped a little bit too much, but it helped with the running a minute, walking a minute. You know, you're just getting to the nitty gritty. That you're in dire straits, just waiting for that finish line. But every step got us closer. The sun started coming up behind us. We'd already started to turn to the west towards the finish line. And I'd never run from sunset to sunrise before in my life. And the sunrise kind of gave me some new energy. We were close to finishing, so it didn't really matter a whole lot. But then Monica pulled up next to us and stopped. And I mean, at that point, I was kind of in tears. It was just, you know, she was a sight for sore eyes. But boy, I was just hurting. And the good, I guess, because the reason I had this huge wave of emotion is because I felt like Monica would care what I was feeling, because Tom certainly didn't care. His job wasn't to sympathize with me. His job was to get me to the finish line, and he did a great job with that by not even, he never asked once, well, how bad does it hurt, or do you think he never even asked. We just kept going, and that's really what I needed from Tom. But Monica didn't really give me a lot of sympathy either. I was just hurting so bad. But, gosh, we were so close. I think I saw her with maybe 3 miles to go, 2 miles to go. So then finally we get to the finish line. It was a bit of a, hurry up and wait kind of thing, because, of course, it was so cold at the finish. Most people were in their cars just waiting for their runners. But my crew, my wife got out, and then Tom's wife was there. And I came in about 6:26 in the morning, so that if we started at 3, you know, that's 15 hours, 26 minutes approximately. But the official results list my time as 15 hours, 15 minutes and 50 seconds. I'm not really sure how that's possible, because I know we started running at 3 o'clock, but maybe we started running a little after 3. I don't think so, though. It doesn't really matter that much, but I think I was more of a 15 hours, 25 minutes It's very possible that because they had a master clock with the 100 milers, and they started it, I think, at 5:08 a.m. or 5:10 a.m., so maybe that makes up for that 10 minutes, but it doesn't really matter that much. It was good for ninth place out of the 14 who finished the 100K. I think that was my first top 10 finish in my life, which was fitting because that was the longest I've ever run in my life. But, you know, I still needed to take a look at my feet and see what had happened, because I was still a little bit worried that because they hurt so bad that maybe, you know, the skin had broken open and I was going to need to, you know, end up going to a podiatrist when I got back home. Even though I guess I kind of knew how to treat myself because I still had some stuff left over from 2010. But I didn't want anybody else to see what my feet looked like when I took my shoes and socks off. I was really just too embarrassed to let everybody that had crowded around me see what I'd done to myself. So I kind of sent them away, and my toes were disgusting, but they were intact. And even though they looked really gross, nothing seemed to require any kind of medical care. It was really cold, so we decided to meet back at Bob's place in Avon, which is that 40-minute drive up the road where we'd be able to pass, you know, some of the other runners. The one thing I regret, though, about when I kind of made everybody leave my area when I took my shoes and socks off, because we didn't really get a group photo at the end. And this is one of those situations that me and there's like the guy Tom from North Carolina, that he and I emailed back and forth about this solo, this kind of selfish sport of ultra running. I missed a real good opportunity there to share my happiness with my crew, and I lost that. I was just thinking of myself, and when we got back to Bob's house, everybody was so tired. Everybody just kind of went their own place and took naps. And they were still asleep when I woke up, and we wanted to go home. So, haven't gotten back together with them yet. I'm gonna get Tom and Rodney race shirts. I've already ordered them because if you crew or pace, you have the full rights and privileges of wearing an event shirt if you're a pacer or worked crew. And but Bob didn't want a shirt, so I got him a special gift, which I've ordered. And I'll present that to him, so I'll get those guys together. But so Tom, that I kind of get it now. I kind of get it now. So it's definitely that's a selfish sport, and sometimes it is best maybe to just rely on yourself. I don't know. I needed those guys to get me to the finish line, but I kind of shunned them at the end, and I regret doing that. So as we drove up the road, we saw the remaining runners still coming in. Some looked pretty bad. I was, you know, obviously, and then when I saw one guy doing the lean, and I was wondering if I looked like that at all during my time on the course. I think I fell asleep in the car. I'd been up for over 24 hours, and you know, it was a good experience overall. It was an excellent experience overall. I'm glad I did it. Glad I didn't get hurt. You know, here it is almost a week later, and I'm actually contemplating cutting the grass today because it feels like spring. It's almost 80 degrees today, and I need to cut the weeds down. So I'm back to normal. I'll be going back to work on the 19th, you know, with no qualms at all, and I'll probably maybe even will go for a run next week just to you know, get some exercise. Nothing crazy. Now, you know, people have asked me, you know, this week I've run into people, and some people around town heard what we did down there, and some people said, well, you know, why do you do that? And I tell them, you know, because it makes me feel liberated. I mean, sometimes I feel like I live such a cautious life. Other than what I do for a living, I don't really do anything risky or dangerous. I'm always watching my back. I'm always making sure my wife and daughter are safe. I'm always trying to be safe with whatever I do. And distance running, like, for example, I wear safety glasses when I run my weed eater. You know, I just don't want something to hit me in the eye that's going to, I don't know, I'm just careful. I use safety glasses in the garage when I'm nailing stuff because I don't want if I miss the nail, then get me in the eye and where I can't work. I mean, I guess distance running kind of allows me to play a little bit and test my limits. And I like kind of taking that kind of challenge on because I felt like it's something that I'm fairly decent at because I don't mentally give up. I haven't given up on one of these things. And That day is coming. I know. I came close down at the Outer Banks with this one. But I think that's why I like it. I got tested real big time in this race. I'm glad I didn't have to stop. I wish I had stronger feet, but I don't. I'll figure out a way to get past this and fix it. You know, sometimes it just takes a lot of reading and trying different things to figure out a way to reduce the friction on your feet. And I'm going to – and I got the book called Fixing Your Feet by John Vonhoff, and – I did not. I think I'm going to look into some of the other products that are mentioned in that book that might have to be ordered online. I just figured I could do it with the stuff I had. But, you know, if I'm going to be doing these ultra marathons, which I really like, I'm going to need to make sure that my feet stay intact. And the 100K distance might be too far for me. I think the 50K to the 50 miler seems to be more manageable. And that might be something that I pursue. The 100 miler doesn't attract me as much, just because I couldn't imagine going another 38 miles from where I was at that point in time, and that's what it would take physically. I just don't think I could do it without a trip to the hospital, and that's not what I want to do. So the Graveyard 100 was my 20th marathon, 20 in the books. I definitely plan to keep going, and I'm going to share a little bit of a little story that Tom, that was on my crew. I'll share with that in a minute, but I want to share two quotes here that I came across preparing for this race, and one I ended up seeing it on the race director's running company's website. But the first one's Ralph Waldo Emerson, unknown year. It's a quote: "What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us," unquote. And the other one is from T.S. Eliot, unknown year, quote: "Only those who risk going too far can possibly know how far one can go," unquote. And those are obviously, neither one of those people I think were distance runners, but it's pretty philosophical. If I had like a philosophical corner part of the show, that would be or the philosophy corner. I think that Coach Ken on the Running Stupid podcast has something like that. Those quotes would be good for him. Let me go to Tom's email here. This is funny. This is really funny. When we were at the pre-race meeting on Friday evening, there was a guy sitting at our table that he had a Vancouver Marathon shirt on, and he was in a real rush. And what appeared was, we found out later, the reason he was in a real rush trying to pack bags, because he had his possessions all over the table, he was from Vancouver, flew in, and his luggage was lost, you know, his running equipment. And he had just gotten it, I think, a half hour before the pre-race meeting. And the pre-race meeting was where people who were running uncrewed had to leave their drop bags. So he was trying to get his drop bags organized, and he just ran out of time. And Tom and Rodney and Bob ran into this guy. His name is Al Harmon, and he came in, I think, around 20-some hours. He did finish the 100-miler. But anyway, I'm going to read Tom's email. It's pretty funny. And so this is it. "Not sure if I shared this story with you or not. At the first water stop after you picked up Bob, there was a 100-miler that came in, the guy from Canada that was busy packing his drop bags at the pre-race meeting, and he was running with both arms inside his shirt. Rodney and I asked him if he needed anything. Said he was freezing. So I told him I had some arm warmers, and Rodney said he had some extra pants. So Tom was putting the arm warmers on Al, and he's trying to stretch and pull them up on his arms, and his hand slipped, and he punched the guy in the face, knocking his glasses sideways. So Tom, Tom was putting the arm warmers on him, and his hand slipped, and he ended up punching that guy right in the face, knocking his glasses sideways. And then he put the other arm warmer on, and Al held his head out of the way. So it was bad enough the guy was running 100 miles, but he had to take a punch in the middle of it. They saw him coming in when we were going back to Bob, so I guess he made it. They'll probably never see the arm warmers or Rodney's pants again. But Tom thinks that they probably saved that guy from a DNF. And I think that's right, Tom. I think that I think you guys are nice to do that. We also I learned that my duct tape had been spread around a little bit and offered to others that needed that. And I had instructed my crew at the beginning of the race that I had plenty of S-caps, plenty of duct tape, plenty of supplies, really. And so if somebody came in and they could help somebody, then by all means, please do that, because that's part of the sport. I do regret a little bit that I did not run with any of the other 100K people. There weren't that many of them, and unfortunately, there wasn't really anybody out there that was doing my pace. There was a guy in front of me that I probably could have run with for a while, but I don't know. At that point in time, I had Bob, and we just passed him, and I was my walking intervals were a little quicker than his, and so we kind of pulled ahead. But you know, it was a great experience. I'm looking back, I'm glad I signed up for it. I'm glad the race director Brandon added the 100K distance. I'm glad I did the training. I'm glad it was an overnight race with added challenges of sleep, being sleep deprived, and having a crew that was sleep deprived and overcoming those challenges. Because running, seeing the moon rise over the ocean, even though I was in pain, and then having the sun rise at the time I was finishing, just made for some really cool memories. And I think that's why you have the memories more. Like, yeah, my feet hurt while I was doing it, but I, you know, that kind of goes away, and you remember the positive things more. And so I learned that I can handle discomfort for an extremely long period of time, and I'm glad I was able to go on. I'm glad I made the decision to go on. But I would have also been disappointed had I had to stop. But I would have come back another day and done that distance again, and that would have been my redemption the next time around. So what's up next for me? Well, I'm directing this little thing called the Ashland Railroad Run with 500-plus runners coming up in a month. So I'm got to buckle down with that. We've got lots. I haven't really talked about too much of that in the podcast because we've been doing a lot of it behind the scenes. And one thing I found, I co-race direct this with actually Rodney's wife, Tamara. We've actually found that having two people being the race directors has really worked well. And we have these work sessions about every other week, where we meet and just make sure we're going down our checklist, and we kind of do a lot of the work right then, you know, make decisions. I just can't do stuff through email constantly. I'm getting overburdened with email just in life in general. It's like everything is email. Everything is electronic messages, texting. It's just killing me. Maybe that's why I like going out there and running. I have made a video from the Graveyard 100, which if you want to get a copy of that, let me know, and I will burn it to a DVD. That way you can just watch it on your DVD player. It's going to be about 20 to 25 minutes long. It doesn't have a whole lot of clips of the running at night because I did not take my camera with me, but my crew got me at all of the aid stations and crew access points. So Tom got a lot of good video. And anyway, it's pretty cool. So what I'll do is I'll ask for the $10 donation to the Ashland Christian Emergency Services Organization, which is just on the honor system. And so you can contact me at ashlanddave@gmail.com if you're interested in that DVD. It's just raise a little money for charity, which is a local group that we work with as a family and through our church here in Ashland, Virginia. And at the same time, get a souvenir DVD and see what it was like down in the Outer Banks. Tough race. Glad I did it. So after that, I'll be doing training for the Patrick Henry Half Marathon, which is at the end of August. And I'm not even really thinking about that much right now. All right, well, this is Ashland Dave, and I'm running in the center of the universe. Well, I'm not really running right now. I'm taking a little break. But anyway, thanks for downloading the show, and that'll be it for the Graveyard 100 Race Report. If you want to email me, you can at ashanddave@gmail.com. I try to respond to each one of them in a timely manner. Every now and then, one slips through the cracks. And if that is you, I apologize in advance. Like I said, I just get so many emails on other things at the Ashland Dave, which I actually set up initially just for the podcast so I could keep it all separate. But it's such an easy email address to give out to people. That's the one that I use for pretty much my whole life except for work. Anyway, this is Ashland Dave, and I'm running the Center of the Universe Center of the Universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and definitely keep on running. And don't forget to hug your kids, and I'll see you guys in a week to 10 days with another podcast. Have a good week.
The 2012 Ashland Railroad Run. Come race the rail in Ashland, Virginia. Join us on Saturday, April 21st for the 34th annual running of one of Virginia's oldest road races alongside the Jackson through the historic town of Ashland, Virginia, the center of the universe. The certified 10K race is a favorite spring ritual among runners from around the Commonwealth and beyond. It's great for setting a PR. There's also a 5K fun run and a 1 mile kids race. The kids race has cool prizes. Join hundreds of your friends and come to the center of the universe on April 21st and race the rail. If you're lucky, you might be able to run alongside a huge moving train. For more information, go to hannaforarts.org or email ashlanddave@gmail.com. You can also go to raceit.com and type railroad in the search box. I was a 5K marshal last year, and it was fun. Run Ashland first. See you there.